The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome on to an actual NBA basketball to analyze edition of Hollinger and Duncan. We got so many questions last week that we're going to still answer a bunch of those, but we'd be remiss if we don't begin by just talking about some of our early impressions of the season. And let's open the floor to you, John. I've got my own thoughts, obviously, but anything that has stood out to you, any seismic shifts in what you thought was going to happen versus what we've seen?
I'm confused by all these seismic blowouts and the decline of the transitive property. If the Clippers beat the Lakers and the Lakers blow out the Mavs, then what should happen when the Clippers play the Mavs?
Lose by 50, obviously, right?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of that going around. And so it makes it a little tougher to evaluate where everyone's really at. And it's good in a way because it prevents us from overreacting to everything that's happening, right? So that part, I think, is actually sort of a low-key positive. That there's not like, hey, this team's 3-0. They're clearly going to play in the finals, you know. There's just a lot of teams scuffling along with good days and bad days right now.
Well, I'm glad that you hit on that because as Seth Partnow, your colleague, pointed out yesterday, you are our resident expert on 50-point blowouts. So I trust you to interpret
correction.
This information.
I am the expert on 60-point blowouts. No, I take that back. I do have expertise in 50-point blowouts, too. That's right. We lost to Golden State by 50 in the first week of 16, was it? 15-16?
Yeah, the 15-16. I was at that game, actually. And hilariously, when Seth made that point, I thought it was actually referring to that game. And no, it was actually that game at Charlotte a couple of years later, which actually I also had the good fortune of watching. I generally try to avoid watching tanking teams too much after the trade deadline, but I was like, I haven't checked in on Memphis and Charlotte in a while. I should probably watch this game just to like make sure that like nothing crazy is happening with these teams that I'm missing out on. And
I'm so sorry.
I think, what did Kemba have, like 50 points in the first three quarters or something in that game?
I think he had 50. I think, was it 50 or like 50? Did he have 58? He went absolutely bananas.
Yeah, it might have been like a lot more than that, actually. Of course, that was a game that got Memphis Jaren Jackson Jr. in part. So I can't complain too much.
Yeah, really. I mean, that game and about 60 others.
Didn't you guys start like 7-5 that year or something?
We started 3-0. Wait. Was that the year we started 3-0 with wins over Golden State and Houston? We won a back-to-back against Golden State and Houston, who had the two best records in the league that year. Neither game was close. The Houston game was close. We beat them later and it wasn't that close. And then we went off the rails.
Well, Mike Conley got hurt, right? Was it, you guys were like 7-5 or something, and then Mike Conley
Conley going out was a huge part of it. We also had very good fortune from the three-point gods that first week of the season, which shockingly did not carry over to the remaining 5.5 months.
Yeah. Well, that might be a vehicle to start talking about the New York Knicks 2-2 start.
Wow. So I watched that Cleveland game last night. I mean, it was amazing. Like, if you were a Cleveland fan, like when Reggie Bullock made the pull up from half court to go into halftime, that was the point where as a Cleveland fan, you're like, okay, you got to be kidding me. Like, Cleveland got so many wide open threes, and Yeah, I mean, when it's a wide open three for Andre Drummond, big deal, right? But they had wide open threes for like guys who can actually shoot too, and they just couldn't make anything. And meanwhile, just whatever the Knicks threw up from beyond the 3-point line was going in, whether it was Julius Randle or Elfrid Payton or whoever was taking them. And that's not to take away from some of the things New York legitimately did well. Like defensively, they're definitely in better shape than we've seen them before. But there's some serious 3-point variance going on here for them too.
Yeah, two straight games shooting over 50% from downtown, those two games that they won. So, I mean, the blowouts, getting back to that, it's not shocking to me at all. And Seth, who's, man, he's getting name checked a lot here early, looked at this, which, kind of showed what anecdotally we're able to recognize is that there are just a crazy number of blowouts. Over 12% of all minutes have been with one team or another leading by 20 points, which is, you know, probably about 50% more than you would typically expect to see at this point in the season. So, I mean, do you want to put your hat on and try to analyze why that's happening?
I mean, I do think as we become more of a 3-point league, you do introduce more variance. I just wonder if somehow the peculiarities of this season have also introduced additional variance with the short training camps and maybe teams trying different stuff on different nights, maybe more proactive about rest early in the season. I mean, we saw, you know, obviously it wasn't the only reason the Clippers lost, but I mean, they didn't have Kawhi Leonard that night. And so I just wonder if it's all combining to make for more variance than we've had in the past. That's my best shot at pulling something out of my ass to explain this.
Yeah, I'll try it. One of my theories I'll run by you is just that this is going to kind of look like for the really good teams, you know, not the teams that are realistically going to be fighting for a playoff berth, but for the real championship contenders, this is just going to look like it's the last 2 weeks of the season or the last month of the season and a season in which, you know, they're not really that worried about home court, which has seemed to have taken on less importance in teams' minds over the years anyway. And who knows whether there will even be any sort of a home court advantage. That's another trend, by the way, that home court advantage has not been as severe as you would have expected, even compared to this point in the season at earlier points. That'll be something to keep an eye on. But yeah, so I think, you know, a team like the Lakers or the Clippers or the Nets, I think that they're going to be satisfied with just playing great games on occasion and, you know, just feeling like, okay, we have our fastball. And then the rest of the time, just like, let's make it to the playoffs. And we like, it was already trending in that direction anyway, but it's going to be even more there. Whereas I think that teams that are kind of not at the very bottom of the league, but are kind of in the middle, they're going to be perhaps pushing harder than ever due to the, and for longer, due to the lure of the 10th seed and the play-in game. And also, you know, teams with younger players as well who are trying to establish themselves, who, you know, don't necessarily have big playoff expectations of playing into, I guess, June and July this year. So I see the league being more compacted than ever between the top of the league and the middle of the league. That's my early thought, and that we're just, again, going to see many extremely inconsistent results due to, I mean, probably rest is the biggest reason, but also just kind of, not really caring that much.
Yeah, there's, because especially if the home court advantage, if that is diminished and if players sense that is diminished, that really reduces the incentive for the players in the top teams to go balls out during the regular season.
Another thing I'll be really interested to look at is the rubber band principle. That's which for those who don't know, basically NBA games kind of have this principle, which as you'd expect with human nature, where the team is down, that is down is generally going to play better than expected, and the team that is up is going to play worse than expected. And whether that's because the team that is up perhaps is experienced regression to the mean, as the same as the team that is down is, you know, generally they'll have to have been some, say, shooting luck for a team to build a 20-point lead over another team, or whether that's just because you kind of let off the accelerator a little bit naturally when you have a 20-point lead, whereas when you're down 20, you're pushing really hard. And maybe part of that is because you have fans in attendance and you're like, hey, this, we're getting embarrassed here. We got to try harder. We can't have this happen. Whatever it is, I'll be curious to see whether that principle holds in this season over a long season without fans. I mean, the bubble was different, right? Like that's the very beginning. All the teams there ostensibly were A, good teams, and B, trying to get into the playoffs and trying to ramp up for the playoffs. And so there's at least in the games where they weren't tanking for seeding, there's a lot of thought there that, you know, we got to get sharp. We got to get ready right now. So I'm really curious to see whether that dynamic changes, and just, you know, also to know eventually on home court. I think if it's, you don't see a home court, then you'll know that it's the fans rather than the travel or the, some of the other sleeping in your own bed, going to your own practice facility, whatever.
Yeah. I am interested to see what, now we might have fans by the playoffs, which will sort of ruin the experience, but But I am interested to see how home court plays out this year.
Yeah, because we don't really know why it is that home court is so important. Although, I mean, you would think that the aspect of the fans is probably it. You know, just exhorting teams. You know, there's some evidence, like Sloan years ago, there's some evidence that, like, in the last few minutes of close games, like, there are certain things you expect more of from the home team or not, like, so like offensive rebounding goes up. That's kind of like an effort thing. Free throw shooting actually goes down slightly because of like the pressure of performing in front of your own fans, whereas it doesn't for the road team, which it was fascinating. I mean, that was years ago that that research came out. So so give us a chance to at least learn a little bit more about home court advantage.
Yeah.
And in the bubble, obviously, there was no home court advantage at all, but then you didn't have the travel aspects, et cetera. Listeners, I want to tell you about a new offering from Sports Business Classroom, an organization that I was involved in founding. And now they are launching the CBA Mastery Course, courtesy of the Cap Father himself, Larry Kuhn, who created the first CBA FAQ way back in 1999. Nobody knows more about the CBA than Larry Kuhn. And now, for the first time, you can learn the same information that Larry has been teaching teams, agents, and executives for over 20 years at your own pace, which is awesome. All the sexy stuff is in there. Uniform player contracts, exceptions, trades, extensions, waivers, the Gilbert Arenas provision. All of it's available via on-demand video. You can get interactive exercises you can do at your own pace. There's an exclusive members-only CBA Mastery Forum, definitions of all the key CBA terms, a certificate of completion if you complete the course. You can also be included in exclusive emails promoting jobs in the industry. You get a discount on Sports Business Classroom 2021 Business of Basketball Immersive Experience in Las Vegas, subject to admission, of course. And placed on the exclusive Vegas Summer League talent profile website, accessed exclusively by sports business executives looking for job candidates. If you sign up, you can receive 10% off the price of the CBA Mastery course using the discount code CAPSPACE if you're paying in full, or CAPSPACE PP if you're playing with a payment plan. Once again, that's the discount code CAPSPACE or CAPSPACE PP for CBA Mastery at cbamastery.com. How about rookies? You want to talk rookies here, and which ones have impressed you or ones that you are kind of worried about relative to their draft slot?
You know, it's interesting because I feel like I've seen, whereas last year it was more extreme where it was like, wow, like out of the gate, it was like, okay, Ja Morant looks really good and a lot of these other guys really don't. And I think this year it's been much more neutral where a lot of these guys have shown that they're okay, but nobody's really stood out, right? Like, I guess you would say Tyrese Haliburton has been the best rookie so far, but it's not like he's running away with the rookie of the year or anything, right? Like, okay, he's averaging 10 and 5. Like, hey, he's off to a nice start.
Yeah. Generally, if you're going to be rookie of the year, you should probably be a starter.
Yeah.
Right? Like which is tough to imagine that'll a non-starter is going to win it.
Yeah. The first and third picks in the draft are not starting. The second pick is starting but not finishing. And that's even with Draymond Green injured, right? And then, you know, it kind of goes from there, right? There's sort of other players who are getting what I would call token starts based on their draft position, but I'm not sure you really call them starters at this point, right? I mean, we'll see with Patrick Williams and Isaac Okoro and Killian Hayes, but right now, they, like, if they were the 20th pick in the draft, not one of them would be starting. Is that fair to say?
I think so. Williams actually, you know, I think he's, there's some thought that it could be him. I mean, he had some foibles yesterday against Washington, but, you know, he's averaging, like, he hasn't looked overmatched as a right. starter.
But if he had been the 20th pick, Otto Porter would be starting, right?
One would think so. But, I mean, Porter is in the last year of his contract. He's not necessarily in their plans going forward. So
that's true.
So, I mean, if you just had to say who's been the best rookie, which rookie has contributed All right, let's make it a little more forward facing. We've got 3-4 games under our belts here. If you had to pick which rookie is going to contribute the most to winning basketball games this year, who do you think it would be based on what we've seen so far? It
might be Haliburton.
I would think I might be in agreement there.
I mean, he knows how to play. He fits there. He can play both guard spots. It might only be a 25-minute role, but he's a good player in that role. Whereas, like, Anthony Edwards is going to be a points per game guy, but I'm not sure if he's going to impact winning at all. It's going to be sort of the same deal with Wiseman, I think. Like, you can see the potential, but you just, like, we'll see what happens here. But there's a lot of
39% from the field is a little troubling to me. I mean, this and the 3-point shooting is nice, and like the one highlighted game where he dribbles the length of the court is nice. But you know, I mean, you were hitting on this last week that you know his hands, his finishing acumen is not amazing. Now he doesn't have anyone to set him up on like alley oops or anything either. But you know, if there's thought like comparing him to DeAndre Ayton, which I think I'm going to end up doing a lot. DeAndre Ayton was putting up like points and rebounds even as a rookie. He just was terrible on defense. And Wiseman, he doesn't really seem to have like the greatest feel just for scoring, you know, the way that Ayton did on pick and roll and offensive rebounds and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like Ayton, I'm trying to remember his first year. We played Phoenix fairly early in that year, and he had a good offensive stat line against Mark, and that was like, oh, okay, like you're pretty legit if you're doing that. I want to say he shot like 10 of 15 or something, had like 25 points, and was like, okay. And we just haven't seen a night like that from any of these rookies yet.
Is there anyone who has just been better than you expected?
Maybe Cole Anthony, although he hasn't really shot that well, but he's looked like he fits right now as a backup one, which is, I mean, notable for the 15th pick. The other guy who's really helping his team achieve its goals is Pokusevski in Oklahoma City.
Hey, he scored his first NBA bucket last night.
1 of 16 from the field so far this season.
Well, he makes up for it on defense. I mean, that said, like you do see the flashes from him.
You understand why he got picked, and it's why I had him rated as a lottery pick. I thought he was a pretty good gamble when she got to that point. But he's going to take some time, clearly.
Oh, I mean, I got one for you, Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of Boston yet, so I kind of...
He's good last night. He closed the game, and he deserved it against... he's shooting it well. He's showing more juice off the dribble to get to the rim. Also, I mean, he's not a great passer, but, you know, given his physical tools, he competes defensively. He's quicker, I think, than people expect. You know, de rigueur for a white point guard, obviously, they have to say that. But, I mean, the people who were sort of, like, comparing him to TJ McConnell just because they both had a crew cut for a while, like, that was wrong. He's a much better offensive player.
The thing like he that. Really showed is his senior year in Oregon is he really improved his shooting, and in particular shooting range, like taking deep threes off the dribble. And as long as that part stays, he's going to be a good enough offensive player to play.
Yeah, I mean, he may end up taking Jeff Teague's minutes when Kemba Walker comes back.
That is a not shocking revelation to those who saw Teague in Atlanta last year.
Yeah, well, I mean, Teague had that ridiculous game against the Bucks, and I'm not sure if he's hit a three-pointer since then. Mm-hmm. Precious Achiuwa, I think, you know, has had some moments. Like, he looked good in the New Orleans game. I mean, if you had to guess who Rookie of the Year is right now, our Rookie of the Year, it sounds like we probably think it would be Haliburton as of now. Right.
But the actual Rookie of the Year is a points per game trophy, which means Anthony Edwards has the inside track.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I expect that now the Wolves have this draft pick thing with Golden State, but where it's only top three protected. But I mean, I think seeing Edwards get up 21 shot attempts in that blowout loss against the Lakers without Karl Anthony Towns, that might augur what we're going to see later in the season when they're out of it. Because I mean, I think that's the other biggest storyline of the first week of the season is like Memphis and Minnesota might just be done.
Well, it's interesting now in Memphis. Yeah, you got Ja Morant out for 3.5 weeks. And the problem is you have Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. out at the same time. So, I mean, they managed to get that win in Brooklyn, you know, Kyle Anderson's going to have to step up and play like a major role. Like he's either the starting or the backup point guard, basically, with Tyus Jones. And because they don't really have a third point guard on the roster. Melton was injured last game, but even when he plays, like he's not a one. So I think they'll still run stuff through Anderson with the second unit. And then you're just getting to such a critical situation as far as the lack of shooting up and down the roster. So it's a tough time right now with three of your top five, coming into the season with Winslow out too, in Memphis. And while their bench has been a strength, asking those guys to now carry the team is a completely different proposition.
Yeah. Although I will say for the long-term future of the franchise might be a good thing. We'll see. I'm very interested to see, you know, it seems like that current regime is relatively realistic mm-hmm. about where they are. And obviously Ja Morant is a huge competitor. But, yeah. You know, we'll see whether he's back on like the 30-minute a game plan when he returns, because, I mean, his usage rate was sky high those first couple of games. You know, he was playing a lot of minutes and they were getting killed whenever he was off the floor as well.
Yeah, because they had him on a minutes limit at the start of last year, remember, because he came back from the meniscus.
Right.
So I would expect the same thing to happen. It's a 3 to 5 week injury. I would expect them to play it closer to the five than the three. So, I mean, they've been careful about that. I mean, there is that little carrot out there with the, you know, finishing the top 10 and getting the play in. But I think from their perspective, they'd probably rather kind of make sure they take care of the future and then see if they can make a run in the second half of the season when Ja and Jaren are back.
I agree with you. And I think that Jaren should absolutely be on a minutes limit too. You would think coming back from that meniscus repair. And yeah, I mean, if they can get one more piece, all these great wings that are supposed to be in this 2021 draft, they can get like a shot creator on the wing. So Dylan Brooks doesn't have to go 8 out of 23 with one free throw attempt every game. That would be really nice for their future. Because if they get one more piece and they can stay healthy, like that could be a pretty nasty team. As of right now, you know, I'm not sure that Jaren and Ja really gets you into like, you know, real contention without more to add to that group.
I think especially like the shooting piece, like one more shooter with some size, because like they have like five different shooting guards who are all pretty good, but none of them is really like that knockdown guy that scares the crap out of you.
Yeah.
And I think one more guy like that also really allows him to weaponize Valanciunas, who like he's a weapon inside, but man, there's just no space for him at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, and he needs to get some more triple doubles too, like he did
in the bubble, exactly.
The process of picking out glasses that look good on you was already difficult when you weren't trying to do it in a pandemic. You go to the store, there's so many of these glasses, they're in that display case, you have to ask the salesperson to hand you one, you start feeling guilty about how much time you're taking, there's a bunch of other people waiting there to get served, you feel rushed, and all of a sudden you've picked out a pair of glasses for a ton of money that you just don't really like that much. Now imagine having to go through that process in these times. Not good. So try out Coastal. They have the most advanced virtual try-on technology you'll find anywhere. It is remarkable. It uses your own camera to digitally project each pair of their glasses. You can browse and virtually try on hundreds of frames without having to leave your couch. And it just looks incredibly realistic as well. This is awesome technology that they have. Plus, their prescription glasses start at just $9 with free shipping and 30-day risk-free return as well. In case you're not feeling it after a few days, you can return it. They have over 2,000 frames to choose from, 24-hour customer support, which Newsweek called America's best customer service. And when you buy a pair from Coastal, you can donate a pair to someone in need with just one click at no extra cost. To date, Coastal has given more than 470,000 pairs of glasses to people in need across the world. Starts at $9. No need to leave the sofa. This is the new way to shop for glasses at Coastal.com. Use your FSA benefits now before they run out. Now and for a limited time, they're offering our listeners the best deal they have going anywhere. 50% off your first pair of glasses at coastal.com/PER. Easy to remember, /PER, because John invented it. Get free shipping, 30-day risk-free returns, and 50% off at coastal.com/PER. Only for a limited time, spelled Coastal, C-O-A-S-T-A-L, coastal.com/PER. Some restrictions apply. Let me ask you this question, dear listener. How do you feel when you wake up? Do you feel tired? tired? Were you tossing and turning? Were you hot? Is your back a little bit sore? Maybe that's because your mattress does not match your body type and your sleep preferences. Helix Sleep can solve that problem for you. They have this sleep quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and lets you get a mattress that is made for you. I first became acquainted with Helix back in 2015. My wife and I tried out another mattress delivery company. It was one size fits all, and it was terrible. We kept waking up with back pain. So she was like, this is a terrible idea. Let's try and find one that has more customization. And we found Helix, liked them so much that I actually DM'd their company Twitter account and asked if I could endorse them on the podcast. And we've been working together now for almost 6 years. Helix has soft, medium, and firm mattresses. Mattress great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. Even their Helix Plus mattress for plus size folks. If you do get it, check it out and give us an unboxing video on social media. We all love to see that. So many of my listeners I've heard from who say that Helix Sleep is awesome. No wonder they were awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. Get started with them. Go to helixsleep.com/PR. Take that 2-minute sleep quiz. They have a 10-year warranty and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you're going to because it's made for you. Right now, they're offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/PR. Easy to remember /PR because John invented it. That's helixsleep.com/PR for up to $200 off and 2 free pillows. Don't forget that /PR to let them know that you came from us. So anything else that stuck out to you about this first week or so of the season?
I'm not sure there's any one team that I can point to and say like, wow, they are really way above or way below my expectation for what they were going to be. Like, I feel like Cleveland looks good. Like they might, I had them going, I think 21-51 or something. I think they might be more like, they might be able to get in the play-in game maybe. But other than that, I'm not sure anyone is like so different from what I expected that I could say after 3 games, like, wow, this is something we really need to watch.
What about the Washington Wizards or the Orlando Magic?
You know, it's funny. I saw Washington's first game against Philadelphia, and I thought they played well and actually maybe should have won, and it was at Philly. So I felt like, okay, these guys look pretty decent. And then just they get a 2-game homestand against Orlando and lose both of them. I still think they're figuring out what they are and what they have, and they certainly aren't a good team. But I'm also not sure they're like I'm not sure they're them being 0-4 is really that dramatically different from what I thought they'd be. I don't know. Maybe am I missing anything on that?
Well,
they lost by 6, 10, 7, and 8. Like, it's not like they're getting the crap beat out. Losing at home to the Bulls is definitely a red flag game. I didn't see that game. So maybe that one would have shifted my perspective a little bit.
Just be glad that you didn't.
Okay.
I watched that game last night, and if anyone would like a full recap, please subscribe to Dunkdown Prime immediately. So, yeah. The descriptions got rather colorful, but yeah, I think we're gonna see again with this crazy season and these home and homes and guys missing games. Although the Wizards have been pretty much healthy, other than Rui, who doesn't really help them win anyway.
Him being out should have helped them, right?
So. Yeah, that's really a little bit of a concern, but we're just going to see teams go on like random 0-4 streaks, teams are going to have like really easy stretches where they're playing bad teams 2 games in a row, that kind of thing. So, I'm not going to foreclose anything on the Wizards. Also, playing Ish Smith and Russell Westbrook together, they could probably junk that one. That would be nice.
Yeah, really. Yeah, there's so much more Ish Smith going on than we had any reason to expect, and it's a little weird. Troy Brown has struggled, unfortunately, because I think he's the guy who ought to be playing more, but is not. I'd like to see them play Isaac Bonga more. I think he's a good player that they kind of forget about once they get into their rotation because he's extreme low usage, but all the data says they play better when he plays. Yep. From the Virginia perspective, free Anthony Gill.
Hey, he played 3 minutes last night at the end of the first half. Raptors being 0-3, I'm not that worried about them yet, but their bench is a little concerning.
Norman Powell can't get out of his own way right now. Like, I assume he's going to go back to being himself at some point, but
yeah, I mean, he needs to lose about 15 pounds, I think, he really looked heavy in the preseason. That was one thing that I noted, that he did not look that athletic. Nuggets 1-3. You know, the Heat, they won that game against New Orleans, and then they've had two pretty ugly losses, but Butler basically hasn't played. So, I mean, I think the Hawks and Suns were kind of two new teams coming together. They have to feel pretty decent about where they are, particularly the Hawks with all the injuries they've had.
Yes. Yeah. Because Atlanta has kind of survived a couple games where they didn't have their whole crew. We still haven't seen Onyeka Okongwu play. Gallinari hasn't played much. Chris Dunn looks like he's going to be out for a little while longer. And I mean, they basically beat Memphis with last year's team. And Kevin Huerter and DeAndre Hunter both had really strong games, and that was a big factor in them winning it.
All right, let's do a little mailbag here. So this will be fun. We've got, I mean, I think we got like well over 100 questions last year.
Not yet.
Yeah, that's right. Next week.
If you're listening to this episode 2 days from now, though, that applies.
Okay, so got the sheet in front of me here.
Okay.
How about this? Let's start with this more general one from Sami Zahor. What are your top ideas to fix the issue that NBA contracts for star players 30 and over pay for past performance and are inevitable albatrosses?
I mean,
I guess, is that a problem? Number one, do you agree with
that? Is that a problem? I think the Supermax could make it a problem and make it a little bit of a time bomb. I mean, we're seeing it with the John Wall contract. We're seeing it with Blake's contract a little bit, although that wasn't technically a Supermax. And that was more injury related too. We'll see what happens with Lillard's deal. You know, it's funny though. I mean, like, is Chris Paul's contract even now, is it that bad? I mean, it's a little underwater, but the biggest distortion isn't at the very, very top end. It's below that, right? It's when you go out 4 years to pay. Well, I guess we use Gordon Hayward as the example. And pay somebody like that, because the distortion in the cap system is that because the best players are capped at what they can make, the guys who are a notch above them take a big chunk of that money instead. And so you end up, you know, going out 4 years and $65 million or whatever on like Marcus Morris.
Yeah, there's the cap on the rookie scale, which everyone knows about. So those players are artificially depressed. Although I would make the point that if you just look at all rookie scale contracts, given the number of players who end up just washing out and the fact that they boosted that rookie scale contracts as a whole don't necessarily provide that much surplus value. But if you get the right one, obviously they provide a ton of surplus value. And then even when you're maxing guys out, now they did relax those Rose Rule criteria a little bit, but for guys in the 25 to 30% max, the absolute best guys, you're lowering their max as well. So one of my thoughts, which I said on previous episodes, is boost that 35% max, and anyone can get that once they come off their rookie scale deal. And you could even make rookie scale deals only be 3 years. I'm sure that would be immediate revolt, particularly given now that high schoolers are probably going to be back in the draft.
Yeah. That's going to be a tough one for teams to give up on. I mean, especially coming at it from a small market perspective. I mean, you want as many potential years of team control as possible, basically, if you're not in one of the glamour markets. And the non-glamour markets have them outnumbered. So I think we're gonna see that remain the case.
Yes. I'm not sure that's to the NBA's benefit overall. Here we go. Do you have any thoughts on expansion? That was like a big topic. Adam Silver didn't rule it out, which means it's probably going to happen relatively soon. Anything that like, do you like which cities it should be, or are you in favor of it?
I am in favor of it. I think the league clearly is at a point talent wise where it can add two more teams. Seattle obviously has to be one of them.
Clearly.
And then the question is, what do you add as the second one? I mean, I would still argue for Vancouver as the second one.
Me too.
I think it's a, you know, it's a big growing city with money, and I think it would have supported the NBA, had the currency issue not been so massively working against them at that time when they moved to Memphis.
Yeah, and the wins and losses not so massively working against them.
Well, I mean, that was an issue, but I actually, when I was still working at ESPN, I mean, I talked to Michael Heisley about this. He basically said it was the currency that forced him to move. Otherwise, he would have kept the team there.
Huh. Interesting. I had not considered that angle. But yeah, I'm not in favor of expansion. I would be in favor of some realignment to get some bigger markets in there and make some more money. Mm-hmm. But I think because the NBA, yeah, you know what? Like guys numbers 450 to 480 aren't that much worse than guys 400 to 450, but that's not what makes a team watchable. What makes a team watchable is the best players. And just if you look at the five worst teams in the league right now and you look at their best player and you're like, is this a guy that you want to watch? I would say no. I'm not like adamantly against it, but I would be like, hey, this is great. Like the quality of play is relatively good, although I don't think it's going to be this season. But if you just saw like how awesome the bubble was when we only mm-hmm. went down to 22 teams, it's like, let's keep adding great players and just boosting the quality of play even more. I think the fact that there hasn't been expansion for a long time is part of why, to me, the quality of play up through last year was as good as it's ever been, maybe since the 80s before they went to the expansion there when they had 23 teams. So although there were some terrible teams then too. I think it was actually better than it's ever been. But that's, I mean, I think selfishly for me, as someone who watches the entire league, expansion doesn't do me any good. But obviously for people in those markets, it does.
Can we talk about the biggest deal about expansion?
I don't know. You tell me.
Finally moving Memphis to the East.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be between Memphis, Minnesota, and New Orleans.
Memphis, Minnesota, and New Orleans are going to be fighting hard this.
Like,
yes.
I think, isn't Minneapolis on, like, the west side of the Mississippi River, and Memphis and New Orleans are on the east side of the Mississippi River?
So Memphis is on the east side. New Orleans is on both the east and west side because it curls around.
It's on like the main part of the season side. I mean, really more the north side if you're looking at it there, but you know,
yeah,
the Eastern Conference side of the Mississippi. Now, geographically, I think it would actually make more sense to have Minnesota be one of them because they kind of have more in common with like Chicago and Milwaukee geographically, whereas Memphis kind of has more, like New Orleans definitely has more in common with the other Southwest Division teams. Like they're pretty close to Houston. I guess if you had to pick two, it would be Memphis and Minnesota for me, just from a geographic standpoint.
Well, you only have to move one, right? You have 15 Eastern Conference teams. You add one from the West to make 16.
Oh yeah, I guess I was thinking both new teams would be in the West, but
no, both new teams would be in the West. So that takes you to 17. And that gets you 17 West, 15 East. So you have to move one from West to East.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
I really don't. It's not that hard a problem.
Yes. Perhaps you have an average intellect.
That's now we get the real story. But yes.
Mine is not a dizzying intellect. I'm just dizzy. I think it would be Minnesota would probably be my pick because, you know, the kind of south, southwest, like there's a little bit more geographical commonality there. Minnesota being in the West, I mean, how far away are they from the closest Western Conference team?
Yeah.
Like 1,000 miles?
Yeah. It's a little bit of a haul right now. Yeah. Because I think their closest one is either Denver or Oak City. So they are closer to, you know, the Chicagos and Detroits of the world. Although for a lot of the teams in the Eastern Conference, because you go back and they all have to go back and forth. For them and for their travel, going to Memphis is much easier for most of them.
Well, but here's the difference though, to me, is that it's just for teams in the West, like, because that's what it really is like teams in the Western Conference having to go to Minnesota, and so that's really where they're getting totally screwed. I mean, any road trip including Minnesota is just a disaster.
If you add Seattle and Vancouver, then your new Northwest division is Seattle, Vancouver, Portland, Utah, and Denver, right? And then you move Oak City into the
Southwest, maybe. Yeah, I mean, you could
Southwest. Although you do need one 16 division, I guess, or you need to do them in groups of four, and you just and it all goes completely different then.
Yeah. Well, when you think about the travel, I mean, that explains why Minnesota has been such a dominant team these last few years, because you know, you just you come in there, you're exhausted, you just lose every time. if you are ready for some football, college football is heading into bowl season, and there are some big matchups coming up in the next week. The NFL regular season is finishing up with the playoff picture becoming clear, and there is only one place that has you covered, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. Get in on the action, and don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON, the name of this network, to receive that 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That is an awesome deal. That's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts, and check them out on social media as well, at BetOnline_AG. Here at the Locked On Network, RockAuto.com is one of our favorite family businesses. They serve auto parts customers online, but they do it with that family touch. The chain store for auto parts, that model doesn't work anymore. They have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. You go in, there aren't any parts out in the front. You go up to that desk, the guy goes into the computer system, they don't have your part, they say they can order it, you have to go back to the store again to get it. Why not just go to rockauto.com, enter your make and model, and shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They've got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. So go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. Make sure you write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. We've gotten sidetracked here. Let's hit some more questions.
Okay.
You want to pick one?
Let me have a look here. Real Mr. 314 asks, with the class of 2021 free agents being decimated, what do you feel would be the best pass for the Mavericks to get better this season or coming off season and grab that third star?
Oh man. Yeah, that is really tough. And same thing with Toronto as well. You know, Miami, I think, might have a few more options. I think they got to just see how this season plays out at this point. If Josh Richardson looks like a tentpole piece, then they can try to re-sign him, but that might take up a fair amount of what they have to do. And what do you see as their biggest need? That's kind of the question.
Yeah, I think if they could get somebody in Richardson's role who was better at it than Richardson, I guess. Yeah. Is that the biggest need? Other than maybe a secondary ball handler so they could have a little more unpredictability in late moments. And it's not just Luka, 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 pound, 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 which I still think hurts them late in close games. I mean, those are the two main things, right? They have pretty good bigs. They have shooting. They have depth. Like, they got a lot of nice pieces there.
So Victor Oladipo has actually looked okay so far.
Definitely. It's funny because I'm doing a piece on The Athletic that's going to be out by the time people hear this, I think, on the best free agents for 2021. And I ended up moving him way up the list based on how he's looked.
Yeah, so, you know, and they're going to have competition with Miami and Toronto as well. Spencer Dinwiddie is an interesting one at 28. Coming off the ACL, Dinwiddie might have some appeal for them because if he's like not quite ready to start the season, which considering this happened in December, he may not be. Most teams are going to be like, well, hey, we got to have who would be in the point guard market for him as a primary ball handler. Be like, oh, we got to have this guy to start the season. Whereas the Mavs might just be like, hey, you know, we're fine with Luka. We don't need you to start the season as long as you're ready to go by the playoffs. And he's only 28. Yeah. You know, obviously that'll depend on his health. But they have a lot of confidence in their medical staff there. So I think that could be a really interesting one for them. And he defends pretty well too. I mean, you can't get anybody else on this team who doesn't defend, like on the wing. They got to have someone who's good there. Luka actually has held up better than I expected defensively, but he's never going to be your stopper. And so you need like real quality around him and around Porzingis, particularly because with Porzingis, you're always going to have to play a conventional pick and roll scheme. So you better have some guys on the perimeter who can pressure and get over a screen.
Yeah, they and you're also, you know, kind of crossing your fingers all year with Porzingis too, that he's going to make it through the campaign. They have ways, like Dinwiddie's number probably isn't so high that it precludes keeping Richardson or Hardaway. What, one of the two?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good buy low. It's risky, obviously, because this will be his second torn ACL of his career. But you know, if you could get him for, you know, $4 or $5 million a year less than you would have been able to before this injury, maybe you're cooking there a little bit.
Yeah, that's an interesting name for them.
But and I guess the other one in more in the short term would be Kyle Lowry.
Yes, absolutely.
Although it's interesting though.
Like, if you're building around Luka and Porzingis, like, do you really want to take that like 1 to 2 years of Kyle Lowry and Because then what, you know, when he ages out, what do you have then?
It's your only chance because Luka's max extension will kick in 2022 and you're done at that point. And he has a huge cap hold. So you basically, whoever you get in 2021, that's your guy. That's your third guy.
It has to be. Yeah. Because I mean, Luka's not hitting free agency, right? They're going to give him the Rose Rule extension. He'll qualify for it. He'll get 30% of the 2022 cap, which will be like, you know, $36 million a year or whatever. And at that point, yeah, you're not a room team ever again.
So, I mean, they basically, like, if they really want to have like a long-term championship contender, to me, either they got to develop some guy out of nowhere, or, you know, Dinwiddie or Oladipo has to be that third guy. I just don't see anyone else who really fits in there.
Let me give you a name.
Okay.
Lonzo Ball.
Just don't think he's good enough.
Really?
He's just a guy.
Wow. Okay.
Like, okay. What does he do that's so great? Can't run pick and roll. His shooting is, well, I think will be average, but it's never going to be elite. Mm-hmm. You know, defensively, he's like, I don't think he's that great of a one-on-one defender. He makes plays in the team concept. He'll rebound. You know, he does some things, but like, does he help them more than even like someone like Josh Richardson? I don't think he does.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Well, feel free to push back at me. I think
he's a pretty good third best player now, and he's still pretty young. You know, the shooting is making some progress to the point where I think he could be a plus as a shooter pretty soon. And I mean, he rebounds at a high rate. He gets you in transition. He just makes winning plays all over.
You're gonna have to define transition for Rick Carlisle though.
Well, they'll have to get used to running a little more, I guess.
But no, I mean, it just, like, I don't think he changes your destiny as a franchise. And then also the restricted aspect. I mean, to feel really good about him, you probably would need to get the sign and trade with New Orleans and maybe give up a first.
Yeah, because, I mean, when you deal with the restricted, yeah, it's definitely a different situation. I was surprised New Orleans didn't extend him.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they tried. What would your offer have been to Lonzo Ball?
I mean, I would have given him more than Derek White. I would have gone into the low 20s.
Oh, I like Derek White way better than Lonzo Ball.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think he's a better shooter. I think he's a better defender. I think he's a better pick and roll player.
Wow. Okay. Okay. If they were the same age, I might be able to go along with that a little more.
Yeah. I just like Lonzo's game to me. He's kind of like the Ben Simmons of the guard position, but he's like guard side. And so like he just has too many of these weird idiosyncrasies to his game. And I'm, you know, not being able to finish at the rim, not being able to be a conventional pick and roll ball handler, never getting to the foul line. It's just, you can only go so far with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do another one here. I'll pick one. Sixers, Matisse Thybulle MVP odds, and they would appear to be rather low at the moment, considering he's not even in the rotation.
I'm surprised he's not playing at all.
Yeah, and I mean, are the Sixers beat guys say he's been terrible in the time that he's been out there. I haven't seen many of his minutes because, you know, he hasn't been out there very much.
Yeah.
I think Doc Rivers just feels like they need more ball handling and scoring, and perhaps it's just that given his limited skills off the dribble that he's just a poor fit with Ben Simmons. Maybe that's what it boils down to for this team.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, I never trusted his shooting last year. I mean, just having seen him shoot at Washington, having been on the floor before games, watching him shoot, I just always felt like that percentage wasn't reality. I mean, we'll see how this bears out, but I wonder if Doc is thinking the same thing, I guess is my question.
Yeah, maybe he's just shot it really poorly in camp. I thought his jumper looked better in the summer league last year and then starting the season, but you know, he certainly is not a natural in that regard. He struggles to dribble, and his defense is spectacular in a lot of ways, but maybe not as good on just sort of a nuts and bolts, you know, possession to possession basis.
Yeah. Okay, probably better in a kind of a high risk gambling scheme.
Yeah. He'd be awesome in like Toronto.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
All right. Let's do a Warriors question here.
Okay.
Given the price of the current Warriors team, this is from Daniel Ravid, I think, but sorry if I didn't pronounce it correctly, Daniel. How long do you think ownership would give it before they pulled the ripcord if things were going poorly? And, you know, this is going to be one of the most expensive teams of all time, maybe the most expensive. It becomes a question. I guess they have the carrot of Klay coming back, so they just want to still give it a go with him and Steph and Draymond.
Yeah, what does pulling the ripcord look like? I mean, other than not re-signing Oubre and then, hey, we're only $30 million in the tax now. Well, actually, if there's a high draft pick or two next year, they could go right back up to $40 million or more. I mean, this is going to be an expensive team. And there's, I mean, the guys they would trade to get them out of this. Clay, I don't think there's a market for his contract right now. Wiggins, I don't think there's a market for that contract. So you're looking at trading Steph or Draymond, basically.
So I think it's really, they could have a mediocre year this year, but if Steph Curry still looks like he's that guy, I think they'll continue on.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, I think we would need to be back to normal and have full fan stuff too. I mean, I think at a minimum, they would feel like they need to have excitement going into next year, that there's still a possibility of being good and all three of those guys, just for the market and like getting fans back in the building and back in the habit of going to games and spending a shitload of money mm-hmm. at that new arena. So I think they might end up throwing good money after bad in that scenario, just because they want to, and maybe they feel that they owe it to that triumvirate. You know, and if Draymond looks like he's okay as well, like if those two guys still look like they're pretty good, they can talk themselves into Wiseman being another guy, they get another draft pick, or they can maybe make a trade. And you haven't seen Clay yet, and there's hope that he could come back and still be good, even though I obviously, after two massive injuries, it's pretty difficult to actually believe that that's gonna be the case. But you know, if you see like KD comes back, he has a good year off the Achilles, mm-hmm. you kind of, you know, begin to believe with Clay again. So I don't think that they will. I mean, you could see them not re-sign Oubre, certainly. You know, there could be a trade of Kevon Looney, particularly if they want to kind of just tank a little bit this year. You'll see some stuff along the margins. I would be surprised to see just a massive dump. But hey, you know, OKC has some pretty big trade exceptions. Maybe they could trade Oubre back to OKC.
They'd trade Oubre, but not into his own exception, right? Because that one's been carved up. He has to go into another one. yeah, that would be pretty funny.
I'm not sure you can do that, actually. But
it depends. Actually, it depends when the trade happened.
Yeah, it has to go into
the reacquiring deadline had to have passed.
The average protein bar is quite terrible. It tastes like one of those layers of sedimentary rock at the top of the Grand Canyon. Built Bar has solved that problem, though. They are now up to 18 amazing flavors, 6 new ones. Cherry Barcia, cookies and cream, caramel brownie, lemon almond cheesecake. That goes with the 12 original flavors like raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, mint brownie. They taste so good because they're covered in 100% chocolate and they're soft and easy to chew, but they are still great for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for a keto diet. For example, their peanut butter bar, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, just 5 grams of net carbs. And you can get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKDOWN, the name of this network. You'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKDOWN for 20% off at builtbar.com.
David Harrison here, the Locked On Washington Football Team podcast, celebrating with you a 21 grain salute to a less boring sandwich thanks to Dave's Killer Bread. I don't know about you guys, but when I eat pizza, I eat it for the toppings, not the crust. And when I eat a sandwich, it's for what's inside the bread, not for the bread. But when I throw a sandwich on 21 whole grains and seeds, thin sliced bread from Dave's Killer Bread, it is the epitome of addition by subtraction. That thin sliced bread lets me focus on what's inside the sandwich, but also adds to the sandwich with killer taste, killer texture, killer nutrition, a subtle sweetness, and a seed-coated crust. Dave's Killer Bread is America's number one organic bread for a reason. It tastes so stinking good. Dave's Killer Bread is made with the highest quality organic and non-GMO ingredients and is power-packed with whole grains, fiber, and protein. Visit DavesKillerBread.com to learn more and look for Dave's Killer Bread in the bread aisle of your local grocery store.
Okay, good one here for the Thunder from Hoops Ninja. Where will George Hill land and how much of a difference could he make for a contender? Looked pretty good in their win over Charlotte.
Yes. You know, George Hill's history is that when he's not on a contending team, he's not that excited about it. He's looked a little more motivated in OKC than he did in Cleveland or Sacramento. I think any contending team has to have his name circled, though, as a guy who can really help them as a third guard, who can shoot, who can defend a little, who knows how to play, can fit in pretty seamlessly, doesn't make a ton of money. I mean, he's 9.5 this year, non-guaranteed next year, so you have some flexibility there. A partial guarantee, but a light one. Overall, yeah, I think he's definitely a target. I wonder what Oak City's asking price will be, if they're going to seek a late first for him, or if they'll be content to take 2 seconds.
Yeah, I wonder if the Clippers have the ammo to get it done. I think he would be a really nice fit there, but they've got a lot of guys already at that position, but coming off the bench, neither of them can defend, and he's made himself into a nice spot-up shooter as well.
Would you trade Lou Williams for George Hill?
Oh, absolutely, particularly because they already have Kennard as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I think that's, you know, that's the deal that lines up salaries for them, and make it a three-team deal and send Lou somewhere else and then send, you know, whatever Flotsam ends up in Oak City.
Yeah, I mean, they would have some hard cap issues there. Hill makes a little bit more than Lou, but I mean, the question
I'm sure they could put Kabengele in the deal. I'm sure they wouldn't fight you on that.
Yeah, but then the question becomes, they would need to outbid other teams, and they may not have scratch to do that in terms of assets. You know where George Hill would fit amazingly? What about off the bench for the Milwaukee Bucks? I mean, they could reacquire.
They can reacquire him because he went to another team.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's actually a kosher trade. That's another one, because of the hard cap, it gets difficult.
Did that end up being a 4-team deal with Milwaukee involved, or is 4 other teams that I'm forgetting?
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, I think it was all part of the same.
It was all part of the same trade, wasn't it? You're right. You're right. I hadn't thought of it in my head,
because we heard about him going to New Orleans much earlier, but then when they actually did it.
Yeah,
let's
you're right.
See here.
You know who could really use him is Memphis, actually.
Yeah. Philly, actually, I think he would be a very nice fit there for sure. Toronto could really use a third guard, so that Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet don't have to play 40 minutes a game, particularly if Powell is going to keep looking the way he does. The Wizards of Washington could certainly use an upgrade as a point guard, because apparently Scott Brooks believes that you have to have 2 point guards on the floor anytime Bradley Beal is off the floor. So at least
unless you have 3.
Yeah, minimum 2.
Yeah, we've seen Westbrook, Smith, Neto in a couple situations, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, so I guess the question becomes, is the asking price a first? Now, Hill is under contract, non-guaranteed for next year, which is nice.
Yeah, very helpful.
So he does have some value there. So, I mean, I think the structure will be along the lines of many of these for OKC, where part of it is to get your first-round pick as the player, but then the other part is dumping a crappy salary.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd be a totally solid fit in Dallas. I mean, he's the type of guy we talked about who Brooklyn actually could probably use
they could use him now for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not sure what's happening with Dinwiddie. I mean, maybe they would feel like they could move Dinwiddie no. What it would be, obviously, would be Prince for Hill. That's it.
Yeah.
They save some money and maybe they send either one of their young prospects or possibly a first. Maybe they're saving those first for like the big move, but I'm not sure what that is. But yeah, with Dinwiddie out, and also probably someone that they can't afford to re-sign next year, and Dinwiddie would probably want to be a starting point guard somewhere as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, Dinwiddie is as good as gone after the year. So they have to, you know, make something out of that contract. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Jared Allen here, too.
Yeah, the Boston Celtics could really use George Hill. I mean, there's a lot of teams.
Yeah.
As long as he stays healthy, and I think he will be getting copious. Okay, you want to do like 2 more here?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, George Hill, Boston is actually a good one. That's one to keep an eye. I mean, the Celtics need perimeter depth of any kind.
You want to do this Wizards one? This is a good one.
Yeah, sure. Hang on here. Yeah, Ronnie Schaffern asks, how do you think Denny's development will be impacted by the Westbrook Wall trade? Best regards from Israel. Nice to know we have some overseas fans. Yeah, it's interesting because he is very comfortable playing on the ball, and that's a little bit more how he played in Europe, and he's probably never really touching the ball in that way on a team with Westbrook and Wall. I mean, you can see even in these first couple games. I mean, Westbrook, the way he plays, it's just hard for some of these other guys to get as involved. I see with Bertans a little bit. I mean, he's been on a restriction, minutes restriction too, but it's just harder to get into some of the stuff they ran for him where they get, you know, a lot of those deep threes with him coming off early curls and whatnot, because Russ just takes the ball and he just goes. And I think that hurts Abdi a little bit too.
Well, and particularly because anytime you're going to do something on the ball, then that means Russell Westbrook doesn't have it and he's not getting guarded.
Yeah, that's the other part of it. And, you know, Abdia likes to do the grab and go, but I think he's probably, I mean, Russ is going to take some of those rebounds though, especially off of free throws. He's going to take all of them. And
yeah.
So that can get in the way a little bit too. Yeah, so I mean,
he's made good use of the very few touches that he's had. He's making his three pointers. And I think defensively, I thought he's willing to stick his nose in there. You know, he's been, I think, you know, looks like he can become a quality option there, but
yeah. I'd say overall, like, I think he's looked fine. Right. Yeah. I haven't been like, oh, wow. Not sure about that one. Like,
I mean, he's out there and he's not killing them. That's pretty good for a rookie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let me pick the last one here. All right. Good question here from Cal Vauden.
Okay.
Who do you like more, Mikal Bridges or OG Anunoby? Who is the better defender and who has the highest ceiling?
Oh, boy. This is hard.
Not for me.
You're team Anunoby all the way, right?
I am, particularly when you get into the playoffs. I think, you know, Bridges, I thought his game against Brandon Ingram last night was instructive, because anytime they tried to run anything for Ingram off the ball, he just shut him down completely. And on the ball, though, he really was not able to contain Ingram in isolation. He just didn't have that level of physical force that you need, and Ingram was just able to kind of power through him for some straight line drives. Whenever he really attacked him in isolation, it looked pretty good. Even obviously the Suns killed him last night, but and, you know, going back to the bubble, the off ball stuff, Bridges just shuts that down. Now, fortunately for the Suns, they have Jay Crowder to kind of take up those strength matchups. Mm-hmm. But I mean, OG Anunoby is the best isolation defender in the league, and I think I like OG a little bit better offensively than Bridges as well. But he's just bigger. He's got more versatility, he can take on more guys, whereas I'm not sure that Bridges, he's just the body type, he's a little too thin, you know. Right. Maybe he can eventually develop that, like, Trevor Ariza old man strength years from now in his core, but as of now, you know, I don't trust him to guard LeBron James or Kevin Durant or, you know, Jason Tatum in a playoff series, and I do trust OG Anunoby to do that. So at the highest levels, give me OG.
Yeah, it's still, I still think Bridges has a little more to him offensively than OG does. I mean, he turns down shots a lot, but I feel like he just has a little more juice to him as far as, like, off the dribble and kind of playing in the flow, a little better feel for the game. So I think he makes up some of that margin there, but I can't dispute you. Like, is it, you know, the gold standard is, can I put this guy in LeBron James? And I feel a lot better putting OG on him than I do Bridges.
Yeah, no, that is the gold standard. And I think, you know, Bridges is a little better off the dribble, a little better pass, but I think OG has actually made himself into a little bit better of a spot shooter. Bridges kind of has that long looping release. You know, like, I don't know that, for example, Bridges could have hit that shot that OG hit to win that game 3 last year against the Celtics, for example.
He wouldn't have gotten it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, Bridges' contract will be fascinating, because I think OG took a little bit of a discount and will have had 2021 free agency, when I think guys are going to get paid just mountains of money this year with all the money that's there around the league. So I wouldn't shock me if Bridges got more than OG, particularly because OG took the player option. I think that's why he ended up getting less.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like OG a little bit better. All right, well, hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Mailbag, we will be back next week in the new year, where I can successfully talk about things having happened last year as opposed to today. And what did you write about for The Athletic this week, John?
I just filed about 2021 free agency, so pretty psyched. My top 21 free agents for 2021.
I'm impressed that you were able to get to that.
It's actually not that hard. It's actually a pretty good crop in terms of guys who are worth more than the mid-level.
That you make a good point there. They're, like, the point guard market is solid. The two guard market is very solid. Fair number of restricted guys are still going to be out there.
Yeah, it's going to, and that's even taking out, like, if you figure Chris Paul won't be a free agent, if you figure Jrue Holiday won't, if you figure Schroeder probably won't, it's still a pretty deep free agent market. It's just the star power has been completely neutered or whatever.
Man, Holiday that's going to be fascinating. There's so many elements to that. There's the pre-trade. Did they kind of work out an extension that they have to wait to do because of the six-month Carmelo Anthony rule? And does he look at everything that's happened around the league where Giannis now is staying, which actually ironically makes Drew's market way better than it would have been if these teams were kind of saving money for Giannis? And so is he, like, because you would think that they at least had somewhat of the outline of what that extension would need to be. But if I'm Drew Holiday and I look at all these extensions and I'm the best free agent on the market, I'm like, ooh, I might want to kind of, I mean, you know, the Bucks don't mind reneging on a deal. So they can't exactly cry foul. I mean, if I'm Drew Holiday, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm going to wait until free agency and you better give me the 5-year max, which is more than he could have gotten in the extension.
Yeah, you're right. That's going to be a really interesting thing to follow.
He's eligible for the 35% max, too. He's been around forever. He was one of the youngest rookies in the one-and-done era.
Yeah, exactly. My guy Ed Stefanski picked him in Philly.
All right, well, we'll have to see how that plays out, and we'll see how this next week or so plays out. Maybe we'll do a little, like, time to panic type of thing next week. I think that'll be interesting. All right, we'll talk to you all then.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.